This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, we'll hear about a dramatic proposal for campaign finance reform. It would keep candidates from knowing who donates to their campaigns and how much they give. Our guest is Yale Law Professor Bruce Ackerman. Ackerman and Ian Ayers are the authors of the new book, Voting with Dollars, A New Paradigm for Campaign Finance. What Ackerman and Ayers propose builds on the example of the secret ballot. Contributors would be prohibited from giving money directly to candidates. Campaign contributions would be made anonymously. Everyone would be given a special credit card, allowing them to make a financial contribution. We'll hear more about this plan in a moment, but before we really get started here this afternoon, let me tell you a little bit more about our guest. Bruce Ackerman is a professor of law and political science at Yale University. In addition to Voting with Dollars, he's the author of The Future of Liberal Revolution and editor of Bush v. Gore, The Question of Legitimacy. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments. Join the discussion with a telephone call. If you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number to use is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Professor Ackerman, good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And you?
It's a beautiful day today, actually. A little too hot, but otherwise, it's great.
Okay. Well, that's good news. We've cooled off here.
Oh, really?
We had a scorcher yesterday, but it's very comfortable today. Mm-hmm. In my introduction, I just gave the sketchiest outline of your proposal for campaign finance reform. Maybe you'd give us a few more details.
Sure. The first crucial thought is that every registered voter, when he goes to the ballot, runs one of his credit cards through a machine and gets a special account of 50 Patriot dollars for the next presidential election, let's say. And then he can go to any ATM machine when he wants to and send this $50 to any candidate, party, or interest group of his or her choice. So if 100 million people, that's the number of people who voted in the last presidential election, voted with their Patriot dollars also, that would generate $5 billion for candidates in for all federal offices in the next electoral cycle. In contrast, in the year 2000, or the cycle 1999-2000, all federal candidates, winners and losers, raised in the aggregate $3 billion. So this one reform in the new paradigm would radically democratize campaign finance. Then the second basic thought, at which you elaborated in your intro, is that you can give more than your Patriot dollars. You can give your own, you know, old-fashioned green dollars to your to candidates, but you can't pay them directly. That would be like corruption. Each candidate opens up a blind trust, let's imagine candidate Quinn is running for the Senate in Indiana. I go up to Celeste and say, Celeste, I've just sent a $10,000 check to you, to your blind trust.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Schmendrick also goes up to Quinn and says, I've just sent a $50,000 check to you. And then 5 days later, Quinn looks at her blind trust account, and it says $8,000 received, or $14,000 received, or something like that. Then and Celeste, over the last week, or you know, how are you? You've been raising, you know, you've been encountering people who have been promising you the moon every 5 minutes. So you're not going to be able to figure out who's actually coughed up the cash. So that means then that donors can give their own money if they believe in Quinn as a person, they believe in her principles, but they no longer will give money motivated by special deals.
Mm-hmm.
So we would expect, this is just off the top of our heads, we being, as you pointed out, Ian Ayers, who's been great on this. So we would expect that these two elements, the Patriot dollars and the secret donation booth, would mean that we would get $5 billion Patriot dollars and the $3 billion that is now corrupting our political system would drop to $1 billion or $1.5 billion, but no longer corrupt because people, you know, should, if they think that Quinn is a great person, be able to, you know, help her out. So we would have more speech. We would move from $3 billion to $6 billion. We had more speech and more democratic control, and then we would deregulate a lot of the rules. You see, like McCain-Feingold is the first reform statute in American history which has sentencing guidelines. It's getting to be impossible to run a democratic political campaign in this country without violating the law.
In the book, you say that that provision of McCain-Feingold is ominous, I believe.
Absolutely. We cannot... A democratic society does not criminalize politics. Just think about it. You know, you have you're running for president, or running for the House of Representatives. You have some 32-year-old kid who's your treasurer. He's there for, like, let's say 6 months or something like that. He's taking checks. He has incentive to take checks. He doesn't know the rules so well. He can't follow things, et cetera, and so forth. It's almost impossible that this kid is not going to commit a crime or two. The worst thing, and then, of course, let's say you win. Well, then everything will be forgiven. But if you lose, there's increasing incentive for the winners to throw you in jail. This is terrible. And we don't need any more with the two basic reforms, you see, because the 50 Patriot dollars and the simple, clear rule, you know, you should go to jail if you actually give the candidate a $10,000 check. That's the simple criminal rule, just like against corruption today. But that's basically it. We don't have to have all these microscopic regulations which are proliferating at a great rate, so we'll have a free, non-criminal process, a democratic process, without doing a lot of things that are generally associated with campaign reform, like having the two-party system get the money. That's what happens with the... in most reform ideas of subsidy, rather than giving a decentralized system where everybody has his or her 50 Patriot dollars, we have some mechanism where the Democrat and Republican parties get a chunk of cash each. This is a much less healthy operation, but I've talked enough.
By keeping private giving, you're also getting around that complaint that limitations on spending are a restraint on free speech.
Well, you see, there is this great case that reformers love to hate. This is a pretty large reform. The great case's name is Buckley against Vallejo, where the Supreme Court said that money is speech, and looks very skeptically upon efforts to curb it. You're absolutely right. This program, this new paradigm, as we call it, is completely consistent with Buckley against Vallejo. We don't have to wait for another 50 years before the present Supreme Court is replaced, if it ever is, by a new bunch of judges who will overrule Buckley against Vallejo. We can democratize campaign finance now. Moreover, I think that Buckley is right. We don't spend enough money in this country on political speech. Don't hold this number against me, but it gives you the right sense. I am almost positive that in the year 1999, the automobile advertisers of this country spent $66 billion in 1 year, give or take a few, you know, 1 million or two one side or the other. Notice, all federal candidates for office in every 4 years in the year 2000 spent $3 billion. We're not spending too much money in political communication. The problem, of course, is that only rich people and special interests are giving them the $3 billion. So our proposal says we should have more money going into politics in this country, from $3 to $6 billion, but it should be democratic. So the Buckley-Vallejo concern that it's a bad thing to limit speech in the name of reform is a very fundamental idea. But our program is more speech and more equality at the same time. While the old program tries to achieve equality by cutting them out down the amount of speech, and that's a big mistake.
Do you think the change in the way contributions would be made would lead to change in terms of the type of campaigns candidates bring to the public?
Of course. Right now, both the Democratic and Republican parties are handmaidens of the rich and well-organized. Simple as that. There will be this tremendous incentive on normal politicians to reach out. Every single person he sees is a source of $50, if he can get it, by responding to majority concerns, not taking a lot of money from well-organized and top 1% people, delivering the goods to them, and then generating a populist-sounding rhetoric for the rest of us. So, and mind you, you see, I don't at all think we have this chapter toward the end about how this would change politics. It would. This is not a liberal versus conservative program. It's the National Rifle Association will be competing for your $50 with the ACLU. Well-organized religious groups will be competing for these dollars with labor unions. There will be much more of a direct financial incentive to go out there and generate programs that normal people think make sense. But I really can't predict whether the left will win more or the right will win more from this.
How did you hit on the idea of building on the example of the secret ballot?
Well, I mean, I'm a professor in both, as you were mentioning, political science and the Yale Law School. I was greatly impressed many years ago. One of my heroes is John Stuart Mill, and John Stuart Mill opposed the secret ballot because he thought that if people went into this secret little box, you see, the secret ballot is really a new thing. It was called the Australian ballot. Before 1880, in the Western world and in the United States, people did not vote secretly.
I was really surprised to learn that.
Yeah, I was shocked too, but it's true. And John Stuart Mill said that's a great thing. People had to stand up and talk, explain. You know, they can't just go into a little booth and then what's going to happen if they go into this little secret booth? They're going to start forgetting that they're citizens. And they'll start voting on people and candidates as if they're like consumer products. Well, you know, there's something to what he said. I think that there has been this sort of thinking, oh, I can just vote for a guy, for a president, for any reason I care for, just because I like his looks or something like that. So that got me thinking, you know, what about the secret ballot? It's a real innovation. Is it what's good about it and what's bad about it? Notice, you see, in the standard idea of campaign finance reform, the standard remedy is first, let's keep everything, make everything public, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than let's keep contributions secret. And the idea is John Stuart Mill's idea. You know, if you know that George W. Bush got a lot of money from Enron, well, then you just know that, and that's a good thing to know. The only problem is that George W. Bush knows it, too. And so he has an incentive to reciprocate to Enron. Similarly, when we have a secret donation booth, we don't know who in fact stood up and gave George W. Bush money because he thinks that Bush's program is excellent. But on the other hand, George W. Bush doesn't know either. And if the secret ballot was an advance over John Stuart Mill's kind of saying, let's have everything in public, well, maybe this is an advance, too. So that's, I guess it's, you know, pretty bookish, huh? But I think there's something to it.
Can you really make campaign contributions secret? You know, earlier on, you know, you said, gave the example of someone coming up to a candidate and saying, well, I'm going to give you my $50, my Patriot dollars, and then on top of that, I'm going to give you $100,000. So look for that to come into your blind trust.
Right.
You know, how, can you really keep this stuff secret?
Right. Well, there are two dimensions here. There's your hypo is suggesting sort of what we call in the book bombing raids. Let's say Bill Gates, you know, who even at the last pathetic hiccup of the Dow Jones is undoubtedly a multi-billionaire. So he goes up to Quinn and says, Quinn is getting $10,000 a month in donations, and Gates says, I'm going to give you $500 million. And then 5 days later, Quinn looks at her blind trust, and it doesn't say the old $10,000 a month. It says $500 million. Well, obviously, you believe that Bill Gates gave it to you. So in order to cut that off, we propose stratospheric contribution limits. See, the existing limits are, after this November, will be $2,000. This will be the limit. We propose something like $100,000, or actually in a complicated way, a function of the amount of money that Quinn has been getting. So I quite agree with you that for a very small number of extremely rich people, we still are going to have the old approach of restricting the amount of money they can contribute, but it's only going to hit a very small number of people. The second dimension of your question, can we really keep it secret, is sort of like the Internal Revenue Service. You know, you send a lot of embarrassing information to the Internal Revenue Service every year. Can they keep it secret? The fact of the matter is they've done a tremendously good job in doing so. So what we are proposing is that in a similar way, like the IRS, we have this agency. If Quinn is the candidate, she registers with the agency. They give her a checkbook. And then invite people to send the money in to the Blind Trust for America. And when the money comes in, we have this core of bureaucrats who then deposit it into the account. That, the Internal Revenue Service tells us, can be done. And there, the final dimension of keeping it secret is the following. I go up to Quinn with a canceled check for $10,000. Say, look, I've just given. Look at this check, $10,000. well, it has to say to the Blind Trust Agency, but take it from me, Quinn, I gave you $10,000. The problem with that is we give you a five-day period of revocation. So I can write a check out to the Blind Trust Agency saying, please send it to Quinn's account. And then the next day, or indeed we even allow you at the same time to say, I revoke. So the Blind Trust Agency would then send you back a canceled check and also send you a treasury check, you know, like you do when you get a refund from the tax fund, to the IRS. So you can show the candidate your canceled check, but he won't be able to know whether you've revoked or not. So those three measures, the stratospheric limits, the group of people who are actually looking at the, you know, taking the checks and putting them into the accounts, and the revocation privilege will secure secrecy. Of course, we won't know. I mean, no, this is, after all, a proposal. We spent an awful lot of time working on it, and the aim, it's not going to be enacted tomorrow. I've gotten a lot of good response, but it's not going to be enacted tomorrow. It will be enacted in a few years. We have a model statute at the end. We invite people to improve on our techniques. But there's no real reason to think that a blind trust won't work. Mm. After all, secret ballot works. Forgetting about Florida for the minute.
Mm. This was an interesting thought. I thought that this was quite thoughtful in the book, in the proposal. The system wouldn't be entirely secret. You'd allow a little room for people to stand up and say, I think candidate X is a good candidate. Anything over $200 in private giving would be kept secret, but $200 or less in private giving could be acknowledged.
Absolutely. Even if you give more than $200, you'll get something back from the authority, the Blind Trust Authority, saying Bruce Ackerman gave more than $200. Of course,
it could be $201.
No, you know, whether it's $20,000 or $201.
Right.
And so you have a piece of paper that permits you to show your neighbors that you went the last mile, and you can. This is a free speech proposal. You are completely allowed to say to your neighbor and the candidate, "I have given him $7,000." You can say anything you like. The cleverness, if you like, the gimmick of the proposal, but it's not such a terrible one, is what economists call creating a noisy signal. The candidate, you see, will be bombarded with all these noisy signals, some of which are true, but many of which are exaggerated. And he's going to have an awful time figuring out who is exaggerating. Of course, he'll know, you know, his old-time friend from college isn't going to lie to him, but you know, most people who give money in campaigns are not old-time friends.
We're talking this afternoon about a proposal for campaign finance reform. It would keep candidates from knowing who donates to their campaigns and how much to give and how much they give. Our guest this afternoon, Yale Law Professor Bruce Ackerman. He's a professor of law and political science at Yale University, and he's co-author with Ian Ayers of the new book, Voting with Dollars, A New Paradigm for Campaign Finance.
I should mention, Celeste, that you don't have to go whole hog, you see. You can think that one half of the proposal is a good idea and the other half isn't. You can think, well, it's a good idea to give everybody 50 Patriot dollars, every registered voter, 50 Patriot dollars, so as to democratize finance. But my secret donation booth idea is a bad idea.
Mm.
Still, that would be a tremendous advance, you know,
mm.
Because even the existing system is slightly reformed by McCain-Feingold, let's say it generates $3 billion. Well, if normal Americans are giving $5 billion, that's a big change in the system. It wouldn't be such a good idea, I should say, to adopt the other part of the idea, that is the secret donation booth. Let's imagine it worked for a minute. So money would go down from $3 billion to $1.5 billion because all these special interest groups would no longer give. And we didn't have the Patriot dollar idea, well, then there'd be a real reduction in speech, and I'm concerned about that.
Mm-hmm.
But you could do the Patriot dollars without the secret donation booth. I should mention also that there are a lot of campaigns in this country in which very, very primitive forms of secret donation booths are already being applied. They're elections for state judges. In many states, I don't know whether Indiana is one of them or not. Maybe one of your people out there will be able to tell us. Judges who, of course, run for office cannot know who's given to their campaigns.
Mm. We're in Illinois, and that's not the case.
I'm sorry.
That's not the case here. I don't know about Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Not the case in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And
but there are, I think, maybe 15, 20 states in which some it doesn't work too well because they haven't really thought it through. But obviously, it's a good thing. It's nice if judges, didn't know that their biggest contributor is is arguing the case for them.
I wonder, you know, here in Illinois, the judicial campaigning has been a real hot subject lately because more and more dollars are going into campaigns and the campaigns have become...
It's a great place to try out the idea of a secret donation booth.
Yeah, I wonder what the judges would think about it. Anyway, what I wanted to do here is give folks the telephone numbers again and invite people to join us and share their thoughts and ask their questions about these ideas, Patriot dollars and anonymous campaign donation booths. Listeners, you're invited to join us this afternoon. Join the discussion with a telephone call. If you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number to use is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. One of the things that I wondered about was other aid campaigns receive donations of goods and services. Hello?
Sorry, I didn't quite hear what you said.
Oh, okay. I was wondering about the other kinds of aid that campaigns receive, like donations of goods and services. Would have you thought about that issue?
Well, I certainly, there are several different dimensions to this problem. One is citizen volunteers. We shouldn't, that's a good thing rather than a bad thing. And candidates will have to buy their services and at fair market value. Donations of goods and services would not donations of goods, volunteer service are fine, but donation of goods wouldn't be permitted. Of course, it'd be a sort of line drawing problem. Obviously, volunteers could drive their own cars and things of this kind. But if someone said, "Hey, I'm going to give you a free telephone service," that would not be acceptable.
Yeah. At what point would a candidate qualify to receive Patriot dollars?
Well, in the more elaborate proposal, see, there's basically three parts of the book. The first part is where we are, at the level we're talking about the basic ideas. Then we start working out a real concrete, pragmatic proposal. And in the third part of the book, we draft a model statute. But in the second part of the book, that is the concrete proposal, we have the following stages. First, there is the exploratory fund. Right in the beginning, each candidate has a number of friends and relations, and he needs a little chunk of money fast to explore things, hire maybe a staffer or two. We want to have that as unencumbered as possible, so we have the old system. You can raise, let's say, $50,000 for a House election in the old-fashioned way, with a restriction, let's say, of $2,000 a shot, up to $50,000 or $100,000, depending on the population and size of the district. During that time, when you actually declare for candidacy, you simply register whenever you want to. At the Patriot office and the secret donation office, probably both of them could be done in the same sort of bureaucratic structure, and announce to the world, send me your 50 Patriot dollars. Send me your donations, blind donations. While each candidate gets a little sort of shot out of the starting gate in the old traditional way by rounding up some friends and relations to bankroll the beginning of his campaign, he is obliged after that beginning to start appealing to folks. Now, you should realize, of course, that there will also be, as well as these candidate appeals, a Democrat and Republican Party appeal, and the Green Party, and whatever one else, and also the interest groups. So the Sierra Club will be asking its members to send them the $50, And then, of course, would-be green candidates will go to the Sierra Club and say, how about giving me some of your Patriot dollars? So the you see, because the Sierra Club won't be able to use the money directly to propagandize for its causes. It's sort of a broker, as is the political parties. And each of these interest groups, from Young Americans for Freedom to the Sierra Club and what have you, will be generating funds, and they'll be looking around the country and say, now, where could this money make the best difference for us? So this is also a very nice way, I think, for citizens in gerrymandered districts, of which there are, sadly, many too many in the country, to have a little bit of political influence. Let's imagine you're in southern Illinois, and it's a heavily Republican district, and you have the sad fate of being a liberal Democrat. You can send your Patriot dollars to the ACLU, who will use it in California to win an election. So it's a little way of, and similarly, obviously, if you're a Republican who happens to live on the west side of New York or something like that. So it's a way of having giving each citizen a sense that his little bit counts. So the process of raising money will actually proceed in a moderately familiar way to American candidates, soliciting interest groups, appealing to people in their districts and other districts, and getting money from parties.
Do you think this would lead to a fundamental change in the two-party system?
Well, you know, it is an interesting point that, let's take the last election, the last presidential election. A lot of people voted for Ralph Nader in the last election because they wanted the Green Party to get over the 5% threshold, which would entitle them to these bureaucratically administered subsidies in 2004. Then you had Ross Perot, who got over that 5% hurdle in 1996. So his party had $12.5 million. You know, right, the Reform Party, a pot of gold, and that's what got Buchanan to destroy the Reform Party. So this kind of, we have already a subsidy structure, but it's not citizen-driven, it's bureaucrat-driven, as it were. So your votes in 2000 affect 2004, and that leads to a lot of perverse consequences. In 2004... people who liked Buchanan would have sent their 50 Patriot dollars to Buchanan. He wouldn't have had to destroy the Reform Party. Maybe the Reform Party would have disintegrated anyway because of Perot's, you know, departure. Maybe not. A lot of people who would not have voted for Ralph Nader. They would have sent their $50 to Ralph Nader, and they would have voted for Al Gore. This is a big plus for the for my idea. It would also, I'm sure, that is compared to the existing system, that it would permit people in the final vote to vote their preference and allow them in the voting for dollars side of it to send it to their ideologically favored candidate. But it's also true, I'm sure, and I think it's a good thing, that it will help third-party movements in America in general. A lot of good ideas have come out of third parties over the two centuries, and this is not a terrible feature. There is one feature of the American political system, however, which makes third parties very weak in general, and that is the first-past-the-post system. You know, if in 2004 a third-party right-wing candidate comes in, that obviously hurts George Bush. If a left-wing third-party candidate comes in, that obviously hurts whoever the Democrat's going to run. So people know that, and especially given the year 2000, this kind of fundamental first part past the post system really does constrain very substantially third parties. So I'm not real concerned that this new financing mechanism will absolutely revolutionize the system, but it would give third parties now and then a boost, and I'm not so. I think that's pretty good.
What about the impact on incumbents?
Hurt them. It would hurt them, you see, because incumbents right now obviously have a big vested interest in the existing campaign finance system. They, you know, they have the power. They can identify who gives, and so it's a money-making machine for them. Their second best choice is the kind of thing that McCain-Feingold represents. Let's cut back the amount of money in the system because the incumbents are very well-known people in their districts, and very few challengers are as well-known. So challengers generally need a lot more money than incumbents. What my system does is start drowning the process in Democratic money, meaning not the party, but, you know, democratically generated $50 a person money. So that means that a group can raise, that has the support of 500,000 people around the country, can sponsor a real challenge somewhere. So this is, of course, I mean, I have no illusions. My program actually works to democratize campaign finance in ways that no previous program, and I know that this might sound conceited, but I can tell you, I've read every single one. No previous program does, and I do not believe that Congress of the United States will happily enact this program unless a lot of mobilized people in the country would support it.
Well, McCain-Feingold was awfully close. This would.
I think that Feingold. Well, we'll see whether Feingold. You know, the next actual in real political time, what's going to happen is that the Supreme Court's going to consider McCain-Feingold next year, and it will strike down parts of it.
Hmm. But it was a struggle for
absolutely
to get
a big
that,
struggle,
yeah.
And McCain-Feingold is more favorable to incumbents in my program by a lot, because McCain-Feingold, if it worked, would cut down the amount of money in the system, and then thereby make challenges from well-financed incumbents more difficult. Well, what my program does is make challenges by incumbents who can raise little bits of money from lots of people easier.
Mm.
And so incumbents are going to be most reluctant. But you're right. I mean, you know, I think that people are getting sick and tired of the present system, which is corrupt. And we can't let this just keep on going. And the weaknesses of McCain-Feingold will become evident after the Supreme Court makes it into Swiss cheese.
In the book, you note that your system has its weaknesses, and you invite people to read the book carefully and to come up with ways to make it a better plan. I'm wondering, what do you see as this system's biggest weakness?
Well, on the Patriot Dollar front, the biggest weakness is, and people have a very big range of reactions to it, will people actually take the trouble to send their money in? I think so, but you know, nothing like this has been really tried.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe people will just say, forget it. Well, I think Americans like novelty and will appreciate the way in which this really makes the democratic process democratic, and that they have almost an obligation to do their bit by sending their $50 in. So I'm not too worried about it, but a lot of people think that maybe instead of 100 million people giving the money, maybe 10 million would. Well, I You know, if that's true, then we have a much deeper problem about the civic culture of America than I believe is the case. but that's one thing that a lot of people have wondered about. The other side, of course, that is the secret donation booth, is what about these corrupt, won't politicians and big givers try to corrupt the bureaucrats in the new system and try to, you know, pay them off and find out who really does contribute to whom? Well, that's a problem. A third problem, not so serious, I think, but a problem, is that the secret donation booth will encourage interest groups to run, quote-unquote, independent issue campaigns. So there's nothing to stop Bruce Ackerman from buying a page in the Chicago Tribune and saying, "I love George W. Bush," signed Bruce Ackerman, right? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to restrict that. I believe in clean air, so does Al Gore, vote for Al Gore, signed Bruce Ackerman. What we do in the book is we say, well, Bruce Ackerman cannot coordinate with Al Gore. He can't go to Al Gore and say, where can my money be best used? And that means that Al Gore would vastly prefer Bruce Ackerman to give a small amount of money via the donation booth rather than running around the country yapping off. Second, as an order of magnitude, the last election, 2000, $100 million were spent in independent expenditures. Maybe under our system, because it creates an incentive for these independent expenditures, will go up to $250 million, but it would still be drowned out by the $6 billion or so going in to the candidates who are running their campaigns. And I think that it's a good thing to have free speech by independents as part of the chorus of American politics. So I don't think it's a real disadvantage, but a lot of people are worried about that.
Mm. Now, you've been working on this idea for a number of years,
mm-hmm.
and now the book's been out 3-4 months.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of reaction is it receiving?
Pretty good. I would say that the reviews have been extremely favorable on the Patriot dollars. Somewhat more skeptical on the secret donation booth. You know, can you really keep it secret kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I sort of like to emphasize, maybe we should test out the secret donation booth in some state judge elections in a serious way to see whether we can actually operate it, you know? I think it'll work. I'm trying to round up political supporters for this in Congress, and people in Congress have been quite receptive and thoughtful, and it's a new idea, you know, so I'm not, such things have to be talked about for several years. Of course, everyone is sort of in a freeze-holding pattern right now because they don't know what the Supreme Court's going to do to McCain-Feingold.
Mm.
And so now is not really the time to launch a huge new initiative before we know what we really got from the last one.
Mm.
But I'm an optimistic kind of guy, but I think that it'll go pretty far.
Well, we'll see, and maybe we'll talk again.
Sure. Everything's possible.
Bruce Ackerman, thank you so much for talking with us this afternoon.
Good talking to you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bruce Ackerman is author with Ian Ayers of Voting with Dollars, A New Paradigm for Campaign Finance. The book is published by Yale University Press. Bruce Ackerman is professor of law and political science at Yale University.